This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Before we even talk to Anthony, isn't the name Stoffel South African? Stoffel van Duren? Well, I know he's meant to be Belgian, but Stoffel, I think a lot of people in Boksburg, Benoni, Brakpan and Springs are called Stoffel. No? Or is that north of Pretoria that the name Stoffel is more popular? Definitely it's a South African name. Well, I think so. Either way, Anthony Reich, a very good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov. You can easily be confused with Stoffel van Duren. I think he's from the Flemish side of Belgium, more Dutch influenced. But I have been following with a great deal of interest the first visit in 22 years by an Israeli foreign minister to Sweden. And Foreign Minister Eli Cohen has met with his Swedish counterpart, Tobias Billström. Now, when we think about Israel's relationship with Sweden, and Sweden being a very liberal country in the way that it is, and having been quite critical of some of Israel's actions in the past, we always get the feeling that the Scandinavian countries, who seem to exist in such a lot of peace and tranquility, just don't get the boiling pot of the Middle East. And then all of a sudden they have this Russian threat on their borders and they kind of understand it just a little bit better, I think. But the interesting thing for me about this visit to Sweden and the fact that it's the first time in 22 years that an Israeli foreign minister is visiting Sweden, I think speaks for itself. But here is the lowdown on Eli Cohen's visit to Stockholm. First of all, he's met with Swedish foreign minister, Tobias Billström, who interestingly is married to a lady who volunteered on Kibbutz Mishmar HaEmek in the 90s. So he has a very, very close link through his wife to Israel. And more than that, he says that his family actually hosted Jewish families in Sweden during the period of the Shoah, Holocaust survivors, after the war. Not his parents, his grandparents, yeah, I apologize, yeah. Hosted Jewish families who were survivors of the Shoah. So he has this really, really close link to the Jewish community and through his wife to Israel as well. But someone who then barged in literally on demanding a meeting with Foreign Minister Eli Cohen is the Swedish Deputy Prime Minister called Ebba Busch. She decided that she wanted to meet with Eli Cohen, even though it didn't seem to be protocol.
Right.
And when we look at some of the things that she's posted on her Facebook page and stuff like that, we see her standing with a T-shirt with the IDF emblem on her back. And in fact, after her meeting with Eli Cohen, she posted a post on her Facebook page, which included the lyrics of Hatikva.
Wow.
And concluded with the words, Yom Ha'atzmut Sameach, Am Yisrael Chai. That is from the Swedish Deputy Foreign Minister. Now, for me, that all came as a huge surprise because, first of all, I didn't understand the personal links that some of these people have to Israel and their feelings about Israel. But I think also we have quite a large agenda that is now being covered and a new reality that Sweden is having to face with Russia's belligerence right on its border. The war in Ukraine, of course, being a big issue. The possibility of Ukraine joining NATO also coming under discussion, the Iranian threat. So there all of a sudden seems to be quite a lot of common interest between Israel and Sweden and potentially other countries within Scandinavia. This new world that we find ourselves in is having some quite remarkable impacts on relationships around the world.
Absolutely incredible. I really, I think I share your surprise, as I really didn't think of Sweden as being very sympathetic or supportive of Israel at all. Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas has called on the UN to expel Israel as a member. Look, I happen to think it's not a bad idea, because at least then there's no more pretending, because right now there's this whole world of pretend diplomacy. So, I mean, I know I'm saying it tongue-in-cheek, but it's just fascinating. Why has he called for this action now?
Well, this was Mahmoud Abbas speaking at the United Nations General Assembly as part of a session which commemorates the Nakba, the so-called catastrophe that became the Palestinian people when the State of Israel was declared in 1948. And this is a session which is hosted by the United Nations, which is exactly the same body which in 1947 drew up the so-called Palestine Partition Plan, where it called upon the Arabs to establish their state in the eastern side of what was then Palestine, and called upon the Jews to establish their state in the western part of what was then called Palestine. The United Nations determined all of that. The Arabs decided not to go with the United Nations Partition Plan, and then decided to attack Israel. So the so-called Nakba, which really refers to the concept of Arabs being expelled from living in Israel, those who happen to live in the western part of the country, which came under Jewish rule, are claimed to have been expelled and to have gone to live in refugee camps. Some of those refugee camps still existing today, with the grandchildren and great-grandchildren of those people who left in 1948 still living under those refugee conditions. That is a discussion for another day. But I'd like to just try and put things into some perspective and to try and highlight some of the ironies that we feel from the speech which the Palestinian Authority president made at the United Nations yesterday. So first of all, this is the same body that established the partition plan, that called upon those two states, which is now hosting a so-called Nakba commemoration. Okay, the so-called catastrophe was, in my humble opinion, self-inflicted. Because if they'd taken up on the plan that the United Nations put forward at that time, then nobody would have been expelled anywhere. And the whole concept of being expelled is also up for discussion, because it's quite a well-known fact that many of those who left were not expelled. They were called upon to leave by leaders of the Arab community at the time to allow this war to continue, because the Arabs were determined and were convinced that the Jewish state would be defeated and that everybody would return back within a few weeks or within a few months or whatever it was, and that, you know, everything would be back to what they wanted in the first place, which is to rule over the entire area rather than just to accept the eastern part. So it's very ironic, in my view, that it's now the United Nations who are hosting the so-called Nakba event, the 75th anniversary of the catastrophe that took place. And of course, when Mahmoud Abbas rails about Israel and compares Israel to the Nazi regime, on which he has written a great deal and denied many of the things that are claimed happened during the Holocaust, and then compares Israel to Goebbels and to the Nazi regime, all of that is hugely ironic, but is accepted in the current modern day diplomatic community for reasons which really escape my understanding.
Because they choose to. Simple.
Well,
because they choose to.
Yeah, and people forget or don't necessarily understand where all of this really has come from. The fact that it was the Arabs who attacked Israel, and it was the fact that many of them willingly and voluntarily left living in Israel in order to try to claim victory from the outside. The only thing that didn't happen according to their plan was that Israel was not defeated in that 1948 war of independence. And now, 75 years later, we have a Nakba event at the United Nations calling for Israel to be expelled from the United Nations.
Yeah, interesting.
And interestingly, so many countries actually heeded the Israeli government's request not to participate. And I'm going to quickly read just a short list of the countries: the United States, Canada, Britain, Ukraine, Australia, Czechia, which we used to call the Czech Republic, which is now called Czechia, Greece, Hungary, Uruguay, Georgia, South Sudan, Micronesia. These are countries that did heed Israel's call not to participate. But it's, I think it's really shameful that the United Nations has such an event at all on its agenda, the catastrophe. Who would have thought that that would become a regular United Nations event?
So why has this, because this year, maybe it's because of 75, I'm seeing an incredible attempt, even here in South Africa, to drum up this Nakba thing. I've seen two articles, two columns yesterday in one of the publications. They're trying extremely hard to get this to become a thing, and which is probably why Abbas is talking about it now, because he's a popularist, right? So he just follows whatever he thinks is going to do the best to get the most attention. But
I think it's opportunistic. I think it's really just opportunistic, Howard. I think that they would do it at any moment whenever they can, but there's a certain level of opportunism. And of course, I think when you look at the background, first of all, not only the 75th anniversary, but also the internal turmoil in Israel, and also the recent Operation Shield and Arrow, and all of those things coming together, I think have just given a little bit of publicity and therefore an opportunity for this to be raised up. And what we do know from the Palestinian cause, and one of the things that they do extremely well, is use public relations and opportunism of this nature in order to raise their cause to those who feel that it's the underdog. And of course they do present themselves as the underdog. The underdog always needs public support, and people are inclined to support people who they feel are slightly weaker, and they play that role extremely well, and they garner a lot of support from it.
100%. Moving on to another conversation. French supermarket chain, and I'm going to butcher it if I try and pronounce it, Carrefour, has started opening stores in Israel.
So you didn't butcher it. I think you did very well indeed. My French is nowhere near as good as yours, but it is a fascinating, it is a fascinating thing, because in Israel we do have, you know, more than a few quite large supermarket chains, some of which are more directed to certain communities than others. And then all of a sudden comes along and the CEO of Carrefour, Alexandre Bompard. And I'm butchering his name as well with my terrible French. But he has partnered with an Israeli company called Elektra, who have previously run a supermarket chain called Yenot Bitan in Israel. And they have now decided to be the face of Carrefour in Israel. And they've begun to open a number of different supermarkets. And they have quite grandiose plans about what they're going to be doing in Israel in order to present themselves. Carrefour already are represented in something like 50 countries around the world. So they've done very well, and they've got this franchise model that they're using in a number of different countries, including Israel. But here's the interesting thing for me. On the one hand, the CEO of Carrefour was in Israel to open their first store, which happens to be in Ra'anana, not far from where I live. And he is claiming that prices will be much lower than those of the lowest priced competitors in the Israeli market. That was his statement in order to try and present himself to the Israeli public. But here is the little killer in all of this, that even though he's claiming that their prices will be a lot lower than the competitors in Israel, the prices will still be something like 10 to 20% higher than their equivalent stores around Europe. So that just shows how expensive things are in Israel.
In Israel,
when
absolutely.
The cheapest supermarket, the
wow,
cheapest
is
supermarket
more expensive
in Israel,
than Europe. Yeah.
Exactly. We'll still be 10 to 20% more than the equivalents in Europe. But of course, we are very hopeful that Carrefour will be successful, and they will present good competition in the Israeli market in order to drive prices down, relatively speaking, to our local environment as much as possible. People, of course, are paying over the odds for just standard necessities in their supermarket shopping. Everybody's feeling the pinch with the inflation rate as it is. And of course, Carrefour have a lot of challenges on their plate in terms of dealing with the issues of kashrut.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I've got three people already have messaged asking about the kashrut situation.
So they will be a kosher store. We do have a number of supermarket chains that have sprung up that do that offer non-kosher products, but in the most part, Israeli supermarket chains, in the most part, are kosher across the board. In other words, there is nothing in that store that you can buy that is not kosher, and it is my understanding that Carrefour will be the same, but we will update you as soon as we have had a chance to look around the store and get to understand a little more about what's happening there and to what extent the European influence might be coming to Israel.
Because I think that's awesome. That's the thing. Look, there's also a tremendous, especially as you've mentioned, in a place like Ranana, you've got a tremendous French influence. So already there's going, it would be like Woolworths Food opening in Ranana. It would, the South Africans would be delirious with joy.
Delirious, I'm not sure, but certainly would be delighted.
you've lived out of South Africa for very long. When you get back to Israel, you do a little survey and you ask any South African that you know that's arrived within the last, I would say, 10 years about Woolworths Food, and they'll tell you.
You'll see that reaction.
I'm confident about.
I have little doubt that you are right.
Either way, finally, just a very quick update on the ceasefire. Is that holding?
The ceasefire is holding, and a few little snippets have come out about some of the operations that went down during a recent Shield and Arrow operation. First of all, thankfully, things are quiet and the ceasefire is holding. But I read a fascinating story about Lag BaOmer, which was right in the middle of the whole operation and caused the IDF to have to rethink some of the algorithms that are associated with the Iron Dome. Why do I say that? Because the Iron Dome is programmed so that any missiles that come from Gaza or elsewhere towards Israel and that are destined to fall in open areas are not intercepted by the Iron Dome. That is part of the algorithm of the Iron Dome. But come Lag BaOmer, all of a sudden Israelis take to uninhabited areas outside open fields in order to have their bonfires, in order to have their kumzits. And as a result of that, they actually changed the algorithms of the Iron Dome anti-missile system in order to intercept even rockets that might have been destined for not built up areas because of Lag BaOmer, only because of a Lag BaOmer. And they went through a whole process of rejigging the algorithms in order to take care of that. Fortunately, we didn't have to test it because there were no missiles that were fired on Lag BaOmer itself. But it's fascinating to me how the days in the Jewish calendar and the events that take place during the Jewish calendar had forced the IDF to make substantial changes to the way in which the war could be potentially have been conducted.
Incredible. It just says so much, in my view. It's what's part one of the things that just make Israel unique, special, and makes it Israel. That's where we leave it. Anthony, we won't be chatting to you tomorrow. You'll be traveling. We'll be back with you on Thursday morning at 7:45. Travel safe.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.